You are Locked On Seahawks, your daily Seattle Seahawks podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Greetings, 12. This is Corbin Smith, your host for Locked On Seahawks. Joining me for our Thursday show, Nick Lee. We got a jam-packed podcast coming your way. Now for your lead story here on Locked On Seahawks. It's a story, Nick, that just keeps getting bigger and bigger and bigger. The rumors are starting to turn into real possibilities, and we've talked about this a bunch on the podcast already, but Antonio Brown to the Seahawks, it continues to end up back in the news. Yesterday, he was working out with Geno Smith and Russell Wilson at Wilson's personal field in California, and then today, Mike Garofalo of NFL Network telling sports radio KJR that he wants to play for the Seahawks. One of his reps said he wants to be a Seahawk, and everything is pointing this direction. And we've already had the discussions about all the obstacles that have to be overcome for this to even happen. But just kind of to revisit it now, because it looks like both sides are very interested. We know the Seahawks have had internal discussions, and their quarterback absolutely wants him. At this point, it does feel like it's leaning towards the direction that maybe at some point – we don't know what the suspensions are going to look like, if he gets suspended, how long it's going to be. But at some point, there could be a very strong chance that Antonio Brown is wearing a Seahawks uniform in 2020.
Yeah, that's pretty amazing to think about, you know, even a year ago, that this is a possibility. And I'm still just vigorously in the camp that says we the Seahawks should not do this. For multiple reasons. And I understand the need for a playmaker, but I also want a playmaker for Russell Wilson that'll be reliable, that'll show up, that'll bring his head in the game. And Antonio Brown's not that guy. I know some people are comparing the situations between Antonio Brown and Josh Gordon. They're extremely different, in my opinion. Gordon is much more low risk than Brown. Brown will demand more money, which, you know, he should. He brings a deranged three-ring circus with him wherever he goes, and he becomes a distraction. He's a cancer. I think he's honestly, and I'm not trying to be rude or insensitive, I think he's sick. I mean, just the things that he's done, some of it doesn't seem like it can be reversible without some serious medication and therapy. Honestly, I'm trying to be serious here. He's egotistical. I mean, that's been since college. That's always been known. And you know who is not any of that is Josh Gordon. And Josh Gordon's never been that in the locker room. Obviously, Antonio Brown has been way more productive more recently than Josh Gordon has. But you know, I have a hard time getting excited for this. I see comments on social media really one way or the other. Like, hey, yeah, it's playmaker. Why wouldn't you do it? It's no risk. It is not no risk. It is not. It is. You know, he's a guy that could divide a locker room. He's a guy that could bring unwanted distractions to this team, and I just don't want that for the 2020 Seahawks.
He is a combustible entity. I've talked about this several times, a narcissistic personality that has shown no remorse for what he has done off the field in the last year. Now, he has been quiet. I will give him that credit. He has been quiet in recent months. Now, the people that are saying, well, he hasn't really done anything since the Patriots released him, that is not true. He's been in trouble with the law several times earlier this year. In January, had a run-in, and then April was charged with a bunch of stuff. So he's done some stuff this year, but in the last couple months, he's been pretty quiet. I'm not buying it as far as, you know, there's been reports out there. I think it was Ian Rappaport earlier today that was on one of the radio stations here locally, and he was saying that Antonio Brown seems to be in a much better place mentally. That might be the case. I mean, I know that he was asked to take some anger management courses and some therapy as part of the deal for him. He agreed to a plea deal on one of his charges that was against him recently. And so that was part of the punishment. He was put on parole for 2 years. So, you know, maybe that has impacted him a little bit. Maybe he's in a better place than what he was. But again, like I said, a combustible entity, a guy that's incredibly talented. I mean, you can't deny the fact he had six straight seasons with 100 or more receptions. He's been a first-team All-Pro four times. Another season, he was a second-team All-Pro. He is second in the last decade for receptions and receiving touchdowns. I mean, on the field, some of these fans that are saying it's a great talent at him, that argument makes sense if you're just completely removing the human element. But again, this is a guy that can come into a locker room. There are very few players you can say this about, even in Seattle, where they've taken on some really strong personalities and made it work. This is a different animal than what you had with Marshawn Lynch, Michael Bennett, and some of the other guys they brought in. I mean, we saw what happened with Percy Harvin. They ended up trading him his second season with the team because they weren't going to put up with it. I think it would certainly be a no-strike situation if they signed Antonio Brown. And Russell Wilson's going to hold a lot of weight. I guess this is my closing comment to all of this. I'm going to throw this off of you for a moment. I got to wonder if Russell Wilson is trying to send a statement to the Seattle Seahawks right now. It seems like, to me, this is not the kind of personality that Russell Wilson is to post a bunch of videos of him working out on social media. I mean, we've seen him do it occasionally, but it just kind of seems like he's jabbing the organization a little bit. Maybe it isn't even Antonio Brown, but he's saying, I wanted superstars. You haven't done that. Get me another weapon, or at least get the defense another weapon, which they haven't done. They haven't signed the big name. They haven't traded for the big name. I've got to wonder if Russell Wilson's kind of jabbing him a little bit like, hey, I'm in my prime, and maybe I'm a little disappointed with how this offseason played out with some of the players we brought in or that we didn't bring in. I just got to wonder if that's part of the equation here.
You know what, Corbin, I didn't think of that. I didn't consider that. That's a good point, because we saw a side of Russell Wilson right as the offseason started that we're not used to seeing, a kind of more vocal, open, honest Russell Wilson. Not that he's lying, but you know, we've all known Russell Wilson to be very professional, gives a cookie cutter answers, never says anything controversial. But this offseason, he's a bit more firm on wanting to be more explosive with some playmakers. And so, yeah, maybe it's not Antonio Brown, but just the essence of throwing to someone who's not on your team, who's a superstar. Because I think you mentioned it, Antonio Brown, you used to look strictly at stats. If he can just get out of his own way and just stop being a ding-dong, he's a Hall of Famer. I mean, straight up. 7 Pro Bowls, 4 All-Pros, and all these 1,000-yard seasons. I mean, that is a Hall of Fame caliber player. He's just an idiot. And
yeah,
so
he just hasn't been able to stay out of trouble the last couple of years. And I just, you know, I've always been somebody that believes in second chances. But Antonio Brown has got a million of them. You look at some of the drama from last year. I mean, this is not even discounting. I mean, this is not discussing the rape allegations and all the other things that ended up coming out. But threatening to retire because he couldn't wear a helmet that he wanted to wear. And then, you know, sharing private messages to the public that were between him and the Raiders organization. I mean, do you want that kind of guy in your locker room? I understand Pete Carroll is a miracle worker compared to a lot of coaches, and maybe he could get that out of Antonio Brown where he's not a problem. But I'm just extremely pessimistic that that would work out. And maybe you would be able for a short while, maybe only having him for half a season, it would end up working in your favor. But I think that's half a season too long given his track record.
Yeah, and he's going to be 32. I mean, he's not getting any younger either. Who's to say that he is going to be his all-pro Pro Bowl self? Even just 2 years ago when he had 1,200 yards and 15 touchdowns. And that's 2 years ago now. That was his last productive season. And now he's getting firmly in his 30s. And we just don't know where his head's at. Is he sick? Is he just a knucklehead? I mean, we just don't know all the facts. And I'm not sure the players do. I've read a really good article about how, yeah, the players will obviously want him. You got Shaquille Griffin tweeting out stuff and a bunch of players tweeting out.
They Cliff love Averill today said they should Cliff sign Averill. Him.
But they don't have to – I mean, they do kind of have to deal with a teammate, but they don't have to deal with as much of the onslaught and the storm that he would bring from a media standpoint, from the front office standpoint. I mean – they just want to talk X's and O's, and they're just thinking kind of how we think in Madden. They're just thinking of X's and O's and yards and TDs on the field, but there's so much more to Antonio Brown than that, unfortunately.
The only way that I'm pulling the trigger here and bringing him in, I mean, obviously you want players on your team that your quarterback asks for, but the only way that I would make this happen is if I sat down, if I'm Pete Carroll and, you know, Brian Schottenheimer and company, and say, look, we're going to abandon what we've done in the past. We are going to throw the ball 50 times a game. Because if you've got Antonio Brown, DK Metcalf, Tyler Lockett, and Greg Olsen, and you've got Russell Wilson at quarterback, you shouldn't be turning and handing the ball off 40 times a game. You know, if that's your rationale, if they really are just going to completely change, which this is not happening, 12s that are listening, this is not going to happen. But if they were going to completely change their offense and suddenly they're throwing it all over the place and then you can keep everybody happy, including Antonio Brown, it could be a lot of fun watching this football team throwing it all over the yard. But that's not going to happen with Pete Carroll as the coach. I just think you're bringing a guy in that might be really happy to play with Russell Wilson, but what's he going to do when he has a game where he's only targeted two or three times? With his past track record, I don't even want to imagine what that would end up looking like.
Because that happened with Baldwin. That happens with Lockett. I mean, that happens with all the Seahawks receivers.
And those guys are not disappear. Those guys are not Antonio Brown. That's everything here in a nutshell. I mean, the Seahawks might think they can find a way to make this work, and maybe it would for a short while. But all it takes is one little match to light this guy, and then you've got a real problem on your hands. And obviously, you could turn around and just cut him, but then you just ended up making a huge mistake.
He's going to cost more than Josh Gordon, too.
Yeah, with what the locker room has looked like the last couple years, too, that is such a fragile organism. You don't want to bring a guy like this into the fold. I know he's incredibly talented, but I'm just going to continue to say no. Don't do it. If they do it, I get the rationale. I get that they believe in their system, their culture, but this would be the ultimate test of that culture, and maybe they would prove me wrong. I am not optimistic that Antonio Brown is going to make work. Somebody's going to sign him because he's a really talented player. I think the Seahawks should either go with Josh Gordon or bring in somebody else. So I'm just not dealing with the headaches and the circus that this guy is going to bring to Seattle, regardless of when they end up getting him. I just don't think it's worth it. When we come back in the second quarter, continuing a series we started a few weeks ago, looking at free agents for the 2021 season, we've looked at Bradley McDougal, we looked at Shaquille Griffin. We're not going to go to the backfield, one of the more controversial free agents coming up, so to speak, in 2021. Should Seattle re-sign Chris Carson or let him walk? Don't go away. You're listening to Locked On Seahawks podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. Chain stores have different price tiers for professional mechanics and do-it-yourselfers. Why spend up to twice as much for the same parts? RockAuto.com's prices are the same for everybody and are reliably low. RockAuto.com always offers the lowest prices possible rather than changing prices based on what the market will bear like airlines do. They have everything from engine control modules and brake parts to tail lamps, motor oil, and even new carpet. Whether it's for your classic or daily driver, get everything you need in a few easy clicks delivered directly to your door. The RockAuto.com catalog is unique, remarkably easy to navigate, and all the parts are available for your vehicle. Choose the brand, specifications, and prices you prefer. Go to RockAuto.com right now and see all the parts available for your car or truck. Write "Locked in their "How did you hear about us" box so they know we sent you. Amazing selection, reliably low prices, all the parts your car will ever need. RockAuto.com. Welcome back. Glad to have you joining us here on the Locked On Seahawks podcast. I'm your host, Corbin Smith, joined by Nick Lee. Later in the third quarter, we have finally reached the end of our top 100 Seahawks countdown. Nick, we get to talk about the top five Seahawks ever to play in franchise history, the best of the best. I'm really looking forward to that. Let's talk Chris Carson now. This is a topic we have explored a few other times earlier in the year because, let's face it, running backs in today's NFL, with the way some of these contracts, the second contracts for superstars, have gone in recent history, teams are really hesitant to throw a lot of money at a running back, even if the player's only 25, 26 years old. If you've got 3 or 4 years under your belt of wear and tear in the NFL, teams are really scared to spend big money to re-sign that player. But this is a much different situation just because of the type of offense that Seattle runs and just how reliable Chris Carson has been. He has had some injuries. He's ended the year in injury reserve two of the last 3 years. But the last two seasons, he played the bulk of the regular season games and back-to-back seasons with over 1,100 rushing yards. Last year, improved in every capacity as a receiver. And he's a beloved figure in the locker room. He loves playing in Seattle. A couple sources I talked to said that he 110% wants to find a way to stay here. I just think it's a lot more complicated than your typical, you know, most teams, I would argue, don't overpay for your running back to return. You can go get somebody else. But I think it's a lot more complicated for a team like Seattle that loves to run the football between the tackles as much as any team in the league.
It's hard to argue against the scheme fit because Chris Carson fits the scheme perfectly, and not every running back, not every great running back would. Not every top five running back in the NFL would have the same success in this offense that Chris Carson has had. And the Seahawks for years after Marshawn Lynch, I mean, it's not decades, but a couple years after Marshawn Lynch had retired and left the first time, they desperately tried to find a replacement and they just could not do it until the seventh round in 2017 when they found Chris Carson. And he's been that guy. And, you know, he's one of six running backs in Seahawks history to post back-to-back 1,000-yard seasons. There's not been very many. Carson's one of them. And he's really summoned that. Not, he's not obviously Marshawn Lynch. He's a bit different, but he just has that physicality that wears the defense down. And the coaching staff just covets that kind of running back, and it's really hard to find that guy. And just the fact that the Seahawks found it in the seventh round, and he's come really cheap because he's been a seventh round pick, and all of a sudden he's going to become very expensive after this season. And he's finished fourth in rushing yards, or excuse me, fourth in yards after contact in 2019, which was more than Ezekiel Elliott, Saquon Barkley, Dalvin Cook, and Christian McCaffrey, by the way. And his 1,230 yards rushing total was good enough for fifth last year. So extremely productive. Yeah, injuries is a bit of a concern to the first 3 years of his career on injured reserve. But you can't argue with the production. You can't argue with the physicality. You can't argue with the mentality he brings. And just really the fear. I mean, you can't tell me. You the analytics people, I'm starting to adopt more analytics. But you can't tell me by the end of the fourth quarter, guys are sick and tired of trying to tackle Chris Carson. I mean, you can't tell me that they're not tired. I mean, he's just that type of running back.
You mentioned this, and I agree with you. He's not Marshawn Lynch. I don't know that I've ever seen a running back that was exactly like Marshawn Lynch in his prime. Maybe Earl Campbell, if you go back and watch old highlights of Earl Campbell with the Houston Oilers. Very similar style runners that just battered people and could also make people miss. I think Marshawn was a little bit more elusive than Campbell was in his prime. But one thing that these two guys, Carson and Lynch, they share is that the rest of the offense feeds off the energy that they bring to the table with how they run. And they're different personalities. Marshawn Lynch is a very eccentric personality. Chris Carson is a very soft-spoken, humble guy. And so, you know, they bring, you know, different personalities to the table, but the way they play, that style, that downhill bruising, I'm going to power through you, break tackles, it fires up the entire offense, especially the offensive line. You love blocking for a running back like that that can create his own yardage by mashing through people. And Chris Carson, like Lynch, very underrated in terms of his ability to make defenders miss in space as well. He is not just a truck stick running back. This is not Ron Dane, who just bulls over people and can't do anything else. He's a very elusive back for being a downhill guy. You can throw pitches to him. He's gotten much better in the receiving game. And so I think that his presence on the field and in the locker room, you can't understate that. And there's a price for that. Running backs, it's unfortunate because this position gets worn down so quickly, and these guys have such short shelf lives at the position. It's unfortunate that we are at the point where we are now where these players, they can't negotiate a new deal until after their third year. By that point, they're going into their fourth season. For running backs, 4 or 5 years, a lot of these guys are out of the league. There are exceptions, but more and more you're seeing teams going by committee and just rotating running backs. And then you got teams like Carolina throwing a bunch of money at McCaffrey. There are some teams that are still bucking that trend and they're paying for their running backs. But the problem here has been the past history, as I mentioned. You look at Todd Gurley. Now, Chris Carson, as far as I know, does not have a degenerative knee. He's had some injuries, but he doesn't have a chronic condition like what Todd Gurley has. And then you look at Le'Veon Bell. He sat out an entire season with the Steelers before he hit free agency, got a huge deal. Jets missed the playoffs. David Johnson, he struggled the last couple of years, and somehow Bill O'Brien thought it was a good idea to trade DeAndre Hopkins for him. And now he's with the Houston Texans, but none of those three teams made the playoffs last year for those players. And so there's a lot of evidence pointing towards don't overpay to keep running backs. At the same time, Seattle gave Marshawn Lynch a new deal back in 2012, and they got two more seasons of 1,200-plus rushing yards out of him and got to the Super Bowl two straight years. And so I think that it's – I guess this is my way of looking at it. I think there's been way too much emphasis put on one specific player when you're talking about the struggles of teams. You look at the New York Jets, Sam Darnold has been okay, but he missed a bunch of games with mono last year, and he's playing for Adam Gase, who hasn't proven he can be a head coach in this league. And then you've got the Arizona Cardinals. They were breaking in a rookie quarterback, and the scheme fit was not good for David Johnson. And Todd Gurley was still fairly productive in some ways, but he's a shell of himself because of the knee condition. That's something that you never anticipated coming. And so I think that we've put too much emphasis on these contracts. Have they not worked out? Yeah, it's evident. But there also have been some examples recently where teams have paid running backs a second contract, like Seattle did with Marshawn Lynch, ended up paying huge dividends for them.
Yeah, for those of you who've listened to me at least for a while on this show, know that I quote Obi-Wan Kenobi all the time, and because he's a wise Jedi, and only a Sith deals in absolutes, and the people that say absolutely no running backs, no second contract, never, you're going to miss out on a lot of good years of running backs. And I'm also going to be, I'm not going to say always extend your running backs when they always have 1,200 yard seasons. No, that's going to get you into some trouble. But I think I'm starting to see that Chris Carson is a bit special in the way that, yes, the scheme fit and just the way that the Seattle has built kind of around him in a way, just with the run game. And I don't see that changing as long as Pete Carroll is head coach. As long as Pete Carroll is head coach, the Seahawks need a running back like Chris Carson. And if that means they pay him, I'm not saying give him, 6 years, $100 million, or I'm not saying anything crazy like that. But I think even with some injury concerns, because there definitely are, this is his second offseason where he's been spending the entire offseason rehabbing instead of preparing, which is absolutely a concern. But if you're talking about maybe giving him money that's, if he's not looking to reset the running back market, which I don't think he will, of course, because Christian McCaffrey, no one's going to top that for a while. If you're talking maybe the Melvin Gordon deal, which is $8 million a year where he got with the Denver Broncos, or something between Melvin Gordon and Todd Gurley. Todd Gurley got 5.5 with the Falcons. I'd be willing to work with that for a couple of years for sure. But anything more than that, and that's too much. And so I really am willing to entertain the idea. I am not going to shut the door just because he's a running back. He's had over 250, just about 250 carries or more two straight years. The wear and tear is there. I'm not going to say that. But there is a risk. I mean, all these contracts are risks. I mean, that's the game of
it's football.
It's NFL.
There's there's always going to be a risk with these guys. They're playing the most physical sport out there. These guys get banged up. And obviously running backs more than any other position. But I'm glad you pointed out the Melvin Gordon contract, because I actually had that down in my notes here, because I've started to warm up a little bit. If you talked to me a couple months ago, I was saying I wouldn't go above $5 or $6 million per year, because I had been taking the bait on these running backs. Don't give them a second contract. But I think if, as long as it's no more than 2 or 3 years, you're not going to give a running back a longer contract than that. I would be fine with giving him $8, maybe even $9 million on a 2-year, 3-year at the most contract, and those back years with very few guarantees because of the running back position. And that's just the way the market is set up now. That deal I would be completely cool with, because this guy has earned it. And you mentioned the scheme fit. He's only going to be 26. I think you can still get another 2 or 3 really good years out of Chris Carson. And I think the real X factor here is, what's the status of Rashad Penny? Because he's going to be missing a good chunk of this year. I guarantee he starts the year on the PUP list. How much faith are you going to have at that point in giving the keys to him next year, or a young running back that you bring in? I'm sure they could have another running back they draft in 2021. I'm starting to lean more towards, this guy earned this money. I'm not saying break the bank to keep him. If that's the case, then let him walk. I don't know that he's going to get that offer anywhere else in the league. But I think, an $8 million per year contract, I could completely live with the way that he's produced and how he's improved in different areas of his game since Seattle drafted him. It's going to be one of the big storylines to watch over the next calendar year, especially if Carson goes out and has another big season and gets a ton of carries. He's able to stay healthy for the most part. Then that's going to put the Seahawks in kind of a difficult situation, because they like keeping really good running backs around, and they have a lot of trust in Chris Carson back in the backfield. The big thing for him also this year, cut down on the fumbles. If he could do that, I think that probably would be the selling point for Seattle. If he can stay healthy and have better ball security, I think they would be more than willing, given their scheme and how much they run the football, to pay him accordingly. They're not going to break the bank, but I think the Seahawks would be willing to look at that $8 million or so range per year on a shorter-term deal. When we come back in the third quarter, we finally reached our top five in our top 100 Seahawks countdown, the five best Seahawks of all time. We're going to go through those top five players when we return from the break. You're listening to the Locked On Seahawks podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. Welcome back. Glad to have you joining us here on our Thursday episode of Locked On Seahawks. I'm your host, Corbin Smith, joined by Nick Lee. For the last several weeks, we have been breaking down a bunch of Seahawks greats, the best players in franchise history. We started at 100, and now we are all the way to the top five, the five most elite players ever to wear Seahawks uniforms. Four of these players are Hall of Famers. One of them right now looks to be on a strong track towards making the Hall of Fame whenever he hangs up his cleats. Let's start at number five, the original enforcer. Only had a seven-year career, but man, was he fantastic. And that was Kenny Easley.
Yeah, of course the Seahawks have Legion of Boom, and that always will be timeless. But before that, Kenny Easley was the prequel to that era. As far as great defensive backs go, I mean, obviously he played his football a long time before the Legion of Boom finished his career in 1987. But I actually put him a little bit lower on this list only because of the brief career. He had a fantastic career when he was on the field. Let's see, seven seasons. He led the NFL with 10 interceptions in 1984 and had five Pro Bowls and three All Pros. And then, of course, 1984, with those 10 interceptions leading the NFL, was named AP Defensive Player of the Year. And very few Seahawks, not even the Legion of Boom, has a Defensive Player of the Year in the NFL. And he's also a Hall of Famer. He's got a gold jacket. So this is the cream of the crop. Now, you could argue that he is the best defensive back, probably is at this point still the best defensive back in Seahawks history. I mean, up and down that seven-year career, I mean, we talk more about baseball gets a really obsessive with some Hall of Fame stuff, and they talk about seven-year peak. Like, what is the player's seven-year peak of their career, and they compare it against other seven-year peaks? Kenny Easley's whole career was a seven-year peak. I mean, he did break down a little bit in 1987, but just the numbers there. And I wish we had an advanced stats for back then, because I think if we looked at him from an advanced stats point, you know, the Pro Football Focus and NFL Next Gen Stats and all those guys, if they were there breaking down Kenny Easley's career, I think we'd maybe even hold him higher in esteem than we do now and maybe one of the better safeties to ever play the game.
So modern-day Seahawks fans loved Earl Thomas. They loved Cam Chancellor. Kenny Easley at 6'3", 206 pounds, he basically was a hybrid of those two players. He had the coverage skills, not quite as good as Earl Thomas dropping back as that free safety, but I mean, he was an incredible cover safety, hence the 32 interceptions in just seven seasons. And he had at least seven picks, both 1983 and 1984, that 10 interception season. He took two of them back for touchdowns. So he was a dynamic playmaker in coverage, and you know he could come up and smack people. What I really wish we had were official stats on his tackle numbers, because unfortunately, early mid-80s, we don't have those numbers, but he could come up and thump people. As I said, the original enforcer. You're talking about an era where there were some really, really good defensive players. You had Lawrence Taylor with the Giants, Ronnie Lott with the 49ers, Reggie White coming into the league with the Eagles, eventually with the Packers. And I think that Kenny Easley there for a 5 or 6 year span was every bit as much in the conversation as best defensive player in football with some of the names that I just mentioned. He was the best safety in football for a 3 or 4 year span when he won that Defensive Player of the Year award. Only he and Cortez Kennedy have ever received such honors. And you're going to find very few players that made a bigger impact in such a short time playing in the league than you're going to see with Kenny Easley, a dynamic player that hit like a linebacker and sprinted like a cornerback. Just a rare talent, especially for that era in the early 80s. Now at number four, the other player that won an NFL Defensive Player of the Year, defensive tackle Cortez Kennedy, coming in at number four. I think his is even more astounding when you consider that he won Defensive Player of the Year on a two-win football team.
I mean, that just speaks volumes to the level of talent that Cortez Kennedy was. I mean, he's one of those guys, too, that just immediately lights up a room. And, you know, unfortunately, he passed way, 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 way too early. Just a big personality. And he really, you know, being selected third overall, was one of the guys that immediately came in and justified that. Not too many guys do that. And, you know, a lot of third round picks do end up working out, but not very many just come in and like, all right, it's my defense now. You know, I'm gonna make a big impact. And it, by the second year, he was considered by his second year, he was a Pro Bowler, 6.5 sacks. And then 1992, of course, his best season, 14 sacks, which I think is third or fourth in single season history for the Seahawks. And yes, won that defensive player of the year. Just up and down the list, one of the more dominant defensive linemen to ever play the game, really. I mean, of course, he has a gold jacket too. And Corbin, I was, you know, when we were making this list, I admittedly, I'm a 12. I'm a true 12, like I've said before, and not because I'm a bandwagon fan, mostly because I married a Seahawk girl and moved up here right before the Seahawks won the Super Bowl, and so I kind of got caught in that fever, and it was really easy to. So I lack a lot of 90s and 80s Seahawks knowledge, and so I've been watching a lot of 99 Seahawks. Don't ask me why. That's just the YouTube videos have just been flowing from 1999. I think it's just really easy to find full games from then. And a couple guys jump off the film, and Cortez Kennedy's one of them. He's one of those guys where all of a sudden I find myself looking for him. Like, okay, you know, what's number 99 and number 96 going to do? And is he going to be – he's going to be, you know, sacking the quarterback. He's going to make a big hit in the running back. I mean, he was just everywhere. And he's one of those guys that just really just stuck out to you as a guy that really was one of the better players on the field every single Sunday. Easily. And, you know, 58 sacks in his career and played 167 games, 11 forced fumbles. I mean, you name the statistic. I mean, he's got it all. And he was a Pro Bowler and three-time All-Pro. He's an All-Pro in his third year in the league and had three straight All-Pro seasons. I mean, the early to mid-90s was peak Cortez Kennedy, and no one on the defensive line was better.
Yeah, he really was a game changer at the defensive tackle position. One of the most complete players ever with his size and the athleticism. You just don't see big men that can move like that very often. We've seen a few guys in recent history that were comparable, but I mean, he was one of the originals. He excelled at shooting the gap, a really quick first step for a man of his size. He could chase down opposing quarterbacks. He was a guy that could also stonewall the line of scrimmage and stuff the run. I mean, he just could do it all. And five different occasions, he had at least 70 tackles and 6.5 sacks. So you got incredible production consistently from one of the most dominant interior defensive linemen of his era. And as you mentioned, the personality, he was for a long time considered one of the NFL's good guys. And talking to Walter Jones about this before, he had a tremendous impact on Walter Jones early in his career. They overlapped for three seasons. Jones was drafted in the first round in 1997. So this guy just, he could do it all on the field. He could do it all off the field. And you mentioned, unfortunately, lost him way too early. Was an incredible personality off the field. And one of the best players that's ever worn a Seahawks uniform. Now at number three, a player that we have the pleasure of watching throw touchdowns, multiple touchdowns, pretty much every Sunday. And yet in 2012, when he came into the league, there were doubters. You're 5'10". There's no way, Russell Wilson, that you can play quarterback at a high level in the NFL. And here we are going into his ninth season, and he is well on his way to a Hall of Fame career.
You know, I've read more lately in the last, I don't know, few months during this offseason of whenever a national pundit refers to Russell Wilson, I've seen so many refer to him as future Hall of Famer Russell Wilson. I've started to finally see that in a lot of national pundits. And for me, I'm not the biggest, my music taste might not appeal to everybody because I have a pretty high level, like really shallow, not really deep into any one band or one genre kind of music taste. And Eminem is one of those guys where I know his big stuff. I can rap along with a lot of his more popular stuff. And one of the songs I really like, strictly because the only mentions Russell Wilson, is Monster, the Monster. I think he does it with Rihanna. And really, I just keep listening to that song because I love that part. You know, Russell Wilson falling way back in the draft, turned nothing into something. And Eminem says that in a song. It's pretty awesome. And really, and that was way back in 2013. And you can think of what he's accomplished since that song came out. I mean, he's obviously, that was when he won a Super Bowl. But ever since winning the Super Bowl, people were saying they went from, oh, yeah, the defense, you know, carried him. Oh, Marshawn Lynch is a future Hall of Fame running back. They got him. That argument disappeared awfully quickly after the Seahawks kept winning games, not winning Super Bowls necessarily, but kept winning games long after the Legion of Boom left, Marshawn Lynch left. All of a sudden, it's Russell Wilson's show. And I think last year was one of the first times where you really saw Russell Wilson carried, dragged, just sometimes dragged the sorry, half-dead carcass of the Seahawks to 11 wins last year. I mean, really, I mean, he was 11 wins. Without the Seahawks, he's the most valuable player to any team in the NFL right now, because if the Seahawks don't have him, last year they're 4-12 at best.
All those close games they had, and his clutch gene, his ability, no matter what the circumstances, we're going to win this game. And he almost did it in that divisional game against the Packers. You're never out of a game with Russell Wilson under center. And you consider the fact he's played in every single game, started every single game since he came to the league. He beat out Matt Flynn right off the bat, and he had a knee injury. I believe it was the 2015 or 2016 season, and he missed a couple snaps so Trayvon Boykin can come in. They beat the 49ers anyway, but other than that, he plays every snap. He is the NFL's Iron Man in the modern era. He's broken so many franchise records already. He's the all-time leader with nearly 30,000 passing yards, 227 passing touchdowns and counting. He's already established a team record for fourth quarter comebacks. We know about his running ability, even at 31 years old. He doesn't move like he did when he came in the league, but he is still a threat with an uncanny ability to extend and improvise broken plays and, you know, create chunk yardage after that. And his receivers learn to play with him. It's one of the more difficult adjustments for a receiver in the NFL when you have to play with Russell Wilson, because a play is never over when he's there. We know he's been great in the playoffs too. 23 career touchdown passes, 96.7 passer rating in 15 playoff games, at least 30 touchdowns in four of the past five seasons. He's thrown less than seven picks the last 2 years, so just incredibly efficient. Only Aaron Rodgers has a better passer rating in his NFL career, in NFL history, than Russell Wilson. And at this point, there really is no debate. We know Russell Wilson's the best quarterback in Seahawks history, but with the numbers he's putting together, a couple more good seasons, and if the Seahawks could somehow get back to a Super Bowl, that would be a clincher. This guy is going to have a gold jacket, just like the other four players on our top five. Coming in at number two, this was really the most debated thing on our list, trying to figure out who is number two and who's number one, because the Seahawks have two legends that really stand above the rest. And this particular player, when he retired after the 1989 season, basically owned every record for wide receivers. He was the first NFL receiver ever to accumulate 100 receiving touchdowns. He was the all-time leader in receptions, receiving yards, and some guys have passed him in the NFL, but he still stands head and shoulders above every other receiver that's ever played in Seattle, and that's Steve Largent.
When you rewrite not just Seahawks records books, but NFL record books, yeah, you're going to be pretty high on the list. I really struggle between him and of course, number one, who's now an obvious one to everybody, but I won't mention his name yet. Seven Pro Bowls, one All-Pro, I think is just an understatement. I think he left a few of those on the table, or at least maybe the writers and the voters did, because he is the most productive skill player the Seahawks have ever had in their history, and it'll be really hard to find someone who will be more productive over their career. I mean, we're talking running backs and receivers and offensive skill players, not a quarterback. I don't think anyone will have a career like Steve Largent. Just for an example, look at the Seahawks all-time leaders in receiving touchdowns. You have Steve Largent at 100, which is a nice, really big number that was a record for a while in the NFL. The second place one is Doug Baldwin with 49. He has more than doubled the next leader in receiving touchdowns in Seahawks history. No one is even halfway there. That is how productive he was. Not only that, but in such a different era of football, it's pretty amazing.
It really is. Just, you know, just the numbers he was able to put up, and we just have to remember that time period, and we're talking about a guy that they traded an eighth round pick to the Oilers for, is still one of the biggest. I mean, if you're an Oilers / Titans fan, that still has to be eating at you all these years later, that we traded Steve Largent basically for a bag of bagels, and he became a perennial 1,000-plus yard receiver. and ended up just shattering the record books before he retired. And it's crazy. His best play to me is not a reception. It is still when he laid out former Broncos safety Mike Harden after Harden intercepted the ball. And Largent ended up just hit-sticking him and forced a fumble. The Seahawks got the ball back. That was the kind of guy that Steve Largent was. He just played at 110% every single play, never gave up on a play. And I just loved watching this guy go up and snag everything, and he never wore gloves. This guy was just the blue-collar receiver that you very rarely are going to see and just put up gaudy numbers year after year after year. Now let's go to number one. This guy, obviously, I've said it time and time again, I think he's head and shoulders above every player that's ever played for the Seahawks, because when we talk about some of the other guys in this list, Cortez Kennedy is fantastic. Kenny Easley, fantastic. Steve Largent was the best receiver in NFL history in some regards when he retired in 1989. But years past, we've seen Jerry Rice, some of those other guys emerge. I think you can still make an argument that Walter Jones is the best tackle that has ever played the game, not just for the Seahawks, but for any team at any point in NFL history. He was that dominant.
You won't have any argument for me. That I think that was the separating factor for me is how has his resume stood the test of time? Obviously, Steve Largent was extremely productive, but yeah, with how the game has changed, his records have been such then passed by some of the great receivers of our game. But Walter Jones's resume, I mean, he's not that old. He retired in 2008, about 11, 12 years ago. But his resume so far has held up to the test of time. In fact, if not more, if left tackles are becoming all the more valuable as the passing game, as the spread game opens up, top-tier left tackles are just diamonds, are just gems in this league. And so that hasn't changed. And Walter Jones paved the way, of course, for Sean Alexander to win his MVP, for the Seahawks to get to their first Super Bowl. I mean, he was there for everything. And he has all the accolades you could want as a lineman, 9 Pro Bowls, 4 first-team All-Pros. And I agree, Corbin. I think that he still is the best offensive lineman, best left tackle in football. I mean, Hall of Famer. And, you know, he's on part of the NFL 100 all-time team. I mean, just you name an accolade that an offensive lineman can possibly win, and Walter Jones has it in his trophy case.
I just want to put in perspective, I always like to throw these numbers out. When he was elected to the Hall of Fame a few years back in 2014, and just looking at some of these numbers, the Seahawks attempted more than 5,500 passes with Walter Jones playing left tackle. He gave up 23 quarterback sacks, protecting the blind side during that time. And this is the number that still, I always do double takes. It still shocks me. He was flagged for a holding penalty 9 times in his entire NFL career. If you want to put that in perspective, now former Seahawks right tackle Jermaine Ifedi had 14 holding penalties during the 2017 and 2018 seasons in 149 less games. That's the kind of greatness that few, if any, players can match at any position. His ability to keep his quarterback clean, and he was an incredible athlete for his size. I always love to go back and watch that block where he was leading for Sean Alexander and took Rucker for the Panthers on a roll, basically just bulldozed him into the end zone in the NFC Championship game in 2005. Still probably the best block I've ever seen in an NFL game. He just put him on a sled and just drove him into the end zone. Alexander followed him. And you just don't see, I mean, there are some really good left tackles in the league today, but there are no players like Walter Jones. He was just that, you know, we talk about generational players. I don't even know if that fits for Walter Jones, because he was just that special. He's a once-in-a-lifetime caliber player at that position. And so it was a no-doubter to me. And this is no offense to Steve Largent, because he's one of the best receivers ever played a game. But Walter Jones is the elite of the elite at left tackle, one of the most important positions in the sport. And he did it his entire career as a Seattle Seahawk, as well as any player that's ever played that position. This has been a blast, Nick, having the chance to go back and look at some of these all-time greats for the Seattle Seahawks. Make sure to follow me on Twitter at Corbin Smith NFL. You can follow Nick at Nick Lee 51. If you'd like to be a sponsor on our podcast, contact us, LockSeahawks@gmail.com. You can subscribe to our show on iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, whatever your preferred podcast platform is. Go to our website, LockedOnSeahawks.com. We are going to be off tomorrow. It's a three-day weekend celebrating the 4th of July holiday, but we will be back with Rob Rang returning on Monday with a new episode of Locked On Seahawks. Enjoy your holiday. Stay safe. Stay healthy. Go Hawks.